The Galactic Netcast special, Attack of the 50s, is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Over 100,000 titles to choose from on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Hey everybody! Welcome to another Galactic Netcast special. Dave is he's busy right now, so
he's working. Slacker.
See, for a while there, he was looking for a full-time, you know, daytime gig, and it didn't happen. And then, pow, he's got it in spades. So he's busy tonight, and the three of us who are his co-hosts for the other two shows, Alien Invasion, of which I'm a co-host of, and Anessa Moines, who actually is a co-host for the other show as well as Alien Invasion, the other show being Time Traveling Robots in Space. And Paul Swickert is here.
Yeah.
Represent Time Traveling Robots in Space. What we wanted to do is we wanted to do a special, because Dave was not going to be available this evening. And I, being the loudmouth talkative one, said, you know what we need to do? We need to do something about the 50s. Sci-fi in the 50s really kind of shaped sci-fi cinema into what we know today. I don't think that there would be an Alien film, Ridley Scott's Alien film, without, you know, It, the Terror from Beyond Space. Now, it sounds like a weird parallel to
that
draw.
That is quite a jump, sir.
It is, but after watching it, I can see some elements of that plot, that whole kind of thought, that thread that is common to both.
It's actually interesting that you bring that up, which, you know, I imagine we will discuss later. But yeah, I drew similar conclusions in watching my film.
Okay. And I'm guessing that Aness is in the same boat.
Totally.
Okay. you're adorable.
Hard-hitting reporting.
Boom, there it is. I just want to pinch your cheeks. All right. let's get back to business here. That's what Dave would want. So anyways, just trying to stick to the format that we normally do. It's Wednesday, September 12th, 2012. And we are going to talk about the history of sci-fi starting in the 1950s. It's a pivotal point in cinematic history, which brings us the good movies that we see, and some of the bad ones that we see today that are sci-fi based. And like I said, we do specials from time to time. Gosh, what was it? We did a special in May? What was that special? I forgot.
What was it? It was...
We did a Doctor Who special, and then you guys did another special?
Yeah, we did.
We did, and I'm trying to actually remember what it was, which is completely escaping me.
I was there for that one.
Oh, special number two. God, I feel like a dork. Alternate universes.
Alternate universes.
Special,
that's right.
Number two. Yeah. So, so here we are.
Indeed.
Woo.
And I just briefly introduced everybody, but we'll start with Anessa. Hi, Anessa. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Brad?
Awesome.
Yay!
I'm actually kind of running things here, and you can tell I'm not used to that, at least in podcasts. So this is going to be a fun ride.
You're doing great.
I'm excited.
So far, so good. Nothing's exploded yet.
Commence knocking on wood. And Anessa joins us from Denton, Texas. What's the upper right hand side of Texas? If you
what
were
you
falling from
a tonsil,
it's the upper right. It's the tonsil, the right tonsil of Texas. Yes. And joining us from California, is Paul Swickert.
Hello. It is wonderful to be here in lovely Glendale. Oh, Glendale.
Stay
classy. Any stories for us?
Oh gosh, you know, we coined the term. what was it? Wide berth when driving in Glendale, because like every single person in Glendale will have a very nice car, which is all for show, by the way. And what they'll do is they will turn right or left as if they were a Mack truck. So they will easily go into as many lanes as they see fit in order to make this very, very, you know, tight 90 degree turn. And yeah, that's Glendale. If I could just summarize it, it's the home of the wide berth.
Stay classy, Greendale. Stay classy. Glendale.
Interesting. Glendale. No, hold up. Brad, your mistake is actually very apropos, considering that supposedly the community college in Glendale is actually based on the Greendale Community College of Community.
Nice.
So
see, look at that.
There you go.
I knew what I was talking about without actually knowing what I was talking about. That's par for the course. And for those of you that haven't seen the shows or have only seen Time Traveling Robots in Space, I'm Brad Ludwig. And here we go. We're about to do this thing. But before we do, we'd like to give a shout out to our audio subscribers. Mm-hmm. And if you want to see us record the show live, those of you listening to the podcast right now, you can just follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+, and we'll let you know when and where it's going to be. Or you always have the live page open on your browser, which you can find at galacticnetcasts.com/live.
Indeed.
So, when we talk about the history of sci-fi, the 50s is really the point in time where sci-fi really kind of literally exploded. You had the close of... yes, exactly.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's all right. It's all right. We had the end of World War II and the invention of the atomic bomb really are some of the things that... the introduction of the Cold War, which started at that point. So you have science, you have paranoia, and you have all these possibilities and new technologies that came out of World War II, and it got people thinking. Sci-fi existed before then, but now people were seeing more and more cinema. Cinema was becoming more and more mainstream, and people were hungry to see something on the big screen. And folks like, you know, Ray Bradbury and other writers and other screenwriters started making scripts for film. And so we got to see some wonderful gems, which we'll be talking about. Each one of us have seen, picked one sci-fi movie from the 50s. And we're going to talk a little bit about the films and, you know, give a little synopsis. Give a shout out to some of the actors of the films. Boy, our thoughts of the films and maybe ways it could have been done better or how it could be redone now better, if that makes sense.
Totally.
So, you know, I'm going to start off with the film that I saw, which I mentioned earlier in the podcast here, It, The Terror from Beyond Space.
Mm. Not to be confused with It, the Stephen King rendition.
No. One is, both seem kind of clownish in their own ways. But,
nice. See? Look at that. Wonderful setup.
Boom. There it is.
Sorry. Go
ahead. And the show's over. Thanks, everybody. No, I'm kidding. You know, this is like It from Beyond Space came out in 1958. So it's towards the end of the 50s era that we're looking at. And as you can well imagine, special effects, not that great. And sadly, writing is very two-dimensional at this point in time. You know, people are so fascinated by the medium of film and of the newness of sci-fi that really just slapping chrome on something and giving somebody a blowtorch and a funny looking gun and some sparklers and you made magic with it. Not like now where you need to have CG and all sorts of stuff going on to really kind of add to kind of suspend disbelief a little bit better than you did if you're watching these older 50s films. So from It, The Terror from Beyond Space, the synopsis is mankind is pretty much gotten to the point now where interstellar travel is possible. The year is 1973, the far-flung future. Mm. And a manned mission to Mars, which is a first expedition, a manned expedition to Mars, landed in 1973, and a crew of 9 people landed on the planet. Landed is kind of a strong word because the ship broke up as it got to Mars and it crashed.
What you call a hard landing.
It was a hard plan, a hard unplanned landing at that particular point on Mars.
So, hold up. From a cinematic perspective, they are, you know, they quote unquote landed and they have no way of getting off. So immediately they are like without hope. They're just like, there's no hope. We're all stuck here.
Well, the interesting part of the film is it opens and you're seeing like a diorama. And, you know, of course, it's 2012. So we're used to, you know, high budget, you know, 3D extravaganzas. And I was looking at this screen going, I'm not sure what I'm looking at. It kind of looks like a space background. I think that's supposed to be a planet, and there's a pile of something there. And the voiceover comes up and says, hey, the year's 1973. They landed something on Mars. 9 people went there. Only 1 person sort of survived, and another mission went back to Mars, and they're picking him up. And God willing, they're going to court-martial him and execute him.
Wow.
Which, you know, it seems pretty extreme because they're fairly convinced nothing is on Mars. And if all of these fellow passengers died, the obvious solution is that the commander who did survive went insane and killed everybody.
That's a heck of a leap. I like that.
It's pretty extreme. And it was so amazing to the announcement is made in a space agency office. And this older gentleman is, you know, basically giving a verbal press release to like a sea of maybe 50 people in the, well, 50 is extreme, probably about 25 people in this room. And at the moment when he finishes his press release that they're heading, this in 4 months, they'll be back from Mars. They're bringing Carruthers back to court-martial him and execute him for crimes against humanity and killing all of his fellow crewmates. As soon as he's done speaking, all 25 of these people, men and women of the press, get up collectively and just about kill each other trying to get through the door. To go call on the telephone and phone into the newspaper or whatever agency that they represent. It was just, it was comical on
That's
certain
awesome.
Levels. Yeah.
I
so,
love it.
but like I said, yeah, the setup is just that. Something horrible has happened on Mars. Another ship has come to investigate the situation and bring a man back. And they have 4 months. How long did it take Curiosity to get from Earth to Mars? Was it 3 months?
I think it was about 3 months. Not entirely sure, though.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I kind of lost track whenever it took off. I think I was busy traveling at the time and didn't really have time. Let's see.
Isn't this your job in some form?
I schedule labs. Technically, that's my job, is to schedule labs.
Okay.
Yeah, she works at JPL, Paul. Didn't you know?
So,
it'd be awesome, though.
Her and Bulbeck are like this. They hang. She gives hair tips to him of how he should shape his mohawk next week.
Yep. Nice. So is your point that they are close, that they're actually somewhat accurate in the depiction of how long it actually takes to get there?
Yeah, it's really kind of surprising. You know, and of course the ship that they're on is like, if you were to close your eyes and think of a classic 50s spaceship, it is all chrome.
Right.
It is pointy as all get out.
Yep.
And it's got a huge sparkler sort of thing that's shooting out of the bottom, which is obviously propulsion, but it's hilarious to see. And it's fun to watch, you know, we've come to know from video on the space shuttles, on the International Space Station, that there are certain things you don't do in a spacecraft. One, you never shoot a gun in a spacecraft because that's just ridiculous. Two,
do they highlight that? Do they say, is that a rule somewhere in NASA's Facebook, like saying, hey, no firing guns. I know this has been a problem in the past, but hey, let's get serious here, people. We're astronauts.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting with the conceal and carry law changes that they've had in Wisconsin, that now we're seeing these stickers go up in windows saying, okay, no guns in here, dummy. Leave your knives and guns in your car.
Wow.
You can't bring them in here. So yeah, I would think that JPL probably has something like that on the outside of the space shuttle or the International Space Station.
They totally do. It's right
See?
There by
okay.
the exit door.
Confirmed, right there.
No, but going back to Curiosity, it actually took way longer, and I probably should have known this, considering I know one of the issues with sending men, like a manned mission to Mars, is the fact that we're not able to really deal with the space radiation quite yet, a way of protecting humans against it.
Well, you
and
know what
the amount of time that it takes for like a craft to get to Mars and back would exceed the amount of time that a human body could deal with the space radiation and not really be affected by it, where it's actually altering.
See,
so
what I
Curiosity
think
Curiosity left November of last year.
Okay. So. Okay.
So a year See, plus.
So they got right? there quicker than Curiosity did.
So you're looking at about
eight months.
Right.
Yeah.
And in the movie they got there in like
in half the time. And you know why? Because the ship's covered in chrome. Boom. It's shiny,
why
so
didn't
obviously
we think about it.
That's what, see, NASA needs to look at covering spacecraft in chrome.
In chrome.
It's shiny, so obviously it bounces radiation right off of it.
It's solar
powered. It's durable. Exactly.
There
exactly.
Done. Next
so other
problem.
Other things you don't do in a spacecraft is you'd never, I don't know, discharge a grenade or 20 in a spacecraft. Another thing you'd never do is have a locker filled with cigarettes, like cartons of cigarettes. It's very, you know, when you watch shows like Mad Men or you, you know, talk to people who have been alive, you know, just did day-to-day stuff in the 50s, you were smoking. That's, you know, it's like you popped out of the chute and they gave you a pack of smokes. That was just mandatory.
Standard issue.
Standard issue. You're breathing. Here, have a pack of cigarettes. We'll fix that. So, anyway, so it's interesting to watch everybody. And the premise of the film, and I don't want to give away the entire bits of the film, but it's just so
please.
Fascinating to...
No
it's so fascinating
alerts
to,
here. Come on. It's
okay.
been 50 years. I think
yeah.
the statute
okay.
of limitations is out.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Please.
So it's very interesting to see there's a four-month trek. You've got people hanging out, and they're just sitting around shooting the breeze, smoking cigarettes. When they get the Carruthers character, who is the leader of the previous mission to Mars where the ship crashed and all of his crew perished but him, they're very nervous about him, supposedly, yet they don't lock him in a room. He's kind of free to wander around and do stuff. And everybody's kind of like, oh, that guy, you know, he obviously killed everybody on his ship. And
I don't like the cut of his jib.
Exactly. But they let him wander around freely. It's just it's so surreal to
this
see.
This man is a mass murderer. We
Here,
should take him
have
home.
Have a cup of coffee. But literally, he goes from one level of the ship down to another one, obviously with an escort, unarmed, and goes to the mess where everybody else is sitting around telling jokes about. And of course, you know, they're in the mess. And you know who is handling the food and dealing with, you know, the dishes and everything? The two female crew members, one of whom
of course.
Is a doctor. And the other, you're not really quite sure what her position is, but it's got, you know, somebody who's obviously a doctor. She has gone through years of medical training, and of course, she's the one fixing the food, pouring the coffee, and just, wow.
That's an interesting form of sexism, because it's almost like sexist without being sexist. Because on the one hand,
like she's really educated.
She's the servant. But she's really smart, and they wanted to, you know, we're progressive. They wanted to acknowledge that she's a doctor. That doesn't happen now. But no, she's still serving the food. That sucks.
Maybe it was because of her doctor skills. They thought she would make an incredible cup of coffee because she's so highly educated.
I love the logic. I would have thought so too.
I've got nothing there.
The right amount of water, I don't know. Water to coffee ratio.
So she's obviously got it down with her years of medical training. So in the process of the whole thing sort of starts with this monster being on the ship. It's like, and they're not very clear at the beginning part. Somebody leaves a door open, and this mysterious kind of, you know, shadowy, you only see the shadow of this figure go onto the ship. So at the beginning, you're not sure if this thing is invisible, but can cast a shadow magically or something. This creature looks like it's like 7 feet tall, but unlike Alien, which was the dude who was I think the actual actor that wore the costume was like 8 feet tall, just incredibly lanky.
Right.
So you had this guy that, I don't know, he was maybe had like blocks under his shoes or something to make him a little bit taller, but his costume is obviously very rubbery. We're going to have a link in the show notes so you can actually take a look at the poster so you can get a good look at the it creature.
So did they discover that there was a problem on their journey back from Mars?
Yes.
Okay, so they picked up the guy, and they're like, okay, you know, we have this guy naturally. We don't know what happened still, but, you know, we're going to go and leave and take him with us. And then, oh, crap, there's an alien with us.
And it all comes about, they grab Carruthers, they get him on the ship, they're keeping an eye on him, and they leave a hatch open because they're jettisoning crates onto Mars because they're empty. You know, just that whole...
We're promoting littering?
Yes, absolutely. It's like, we're done with this. Let's dump it on the planet. It's just that whole bit of hubris of, you know, we're a lot more eco-conscious now than we obviously were in the 50s. But it's so interesting to look back in time and see that thought process of go, wow, we're here and we need to get rid of this. We'll just throw it over here. Nobody will ever see it again. And of course, as we know now, it comes back and bites you in the ass. So
I'm curious, did you ever actually see Mars, like the planet? Did you get a sense of what it was like? I'm curious how accurate they were.
You know, it's desolate and barren, relatively flat.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to screw that up. I mean, we had decent telescopes at the time, so
you would think so. And we'll get to that, but yeah. Oh,
so you have a good gem that's really space accurate. All right. Excellent. That's what I wanted to hear. So at the point they jettison this crap off of the ship, and this creature, you get the sense that he's come on board. And then they lift off from Mars on their four-month journey back. And everybody's all, like I said before, grumbly about this Carruthers character that, you know, he's a crazy murderer, and they're waiting for him to snap. And this, what was his name? Not Calder. Van Heusen. That's who it was. The guy who was running the second mission. Wants to get him to crack and wants to get him to confess. So as soon as they land on Earth, they can just, you know, throw him in the brig, court-martial him, and kill him. Just boom, and done. Mm. And at the point where... And it's a great line, too. Carruthers seems to be a little distant, slightly distraught, not the kind of behavior that a mass murderer would really have. At a certain point, we are the camera kind of pulls away from the main crew activity, and there's a gentleman that's kind of checking out one of the other areas of the ship, and he is assaulted by it. Okay. And the ship is, it's a tall cylindrical tube. And I'm doing this on the video. If you're not watching the video cast, I really apologize. Think of a pointy cylindrical tube with fins at the bottom, okay? So this ship, they're up at a higher level playing, they're playing chess actually for fun, because why not? And they're probably on like, you know, the top uppermost level. And Carruthers at a certain point's like, "Hey, did you hear that?" And everybody's like, "What? You're crazy. You're cracking. Wah." And he says this line that's awesome. Somebody says, "You know, we don't hear anything." He's like, "You reteach yourself to listen on Mars," which just seems kind of, yeah, I know, kind of creepy and everything. So at this point, he's kind of vindicated. They realize that there is something on the ship. It's killed two people. And what it's done is it pulls out the oxygen and the water from the body. And you eventually figure out, or they eventually figure out, that because this creature is on this desolate planet, there's no water, there's no air, it feeds off of that. How it lasted that long without humans landing on there, we'll never know.
Magic.
That's the movie magic.
Space
that,
dust.
Yes. Yes.
It was frozen in the ice.
No. No, they didn't even go that far.
Aw. But we can.
Yes, we can. Ice. It was absolutely. We know that there's ice on the northernmost part of Mars, so obviously they were in that region. So, yeah, it basically, you know, pulls all the water, all the oxygen out of the human body, and it just kind of withers and looks kind of nasty. The thing is incredibly, like I said, it's 7 feet tall, so it's incredibly big, incredibly strong. And they are shooting guns at this creature, which is having no effect.
Like real guns or like?
Like real guns. It's not even like ray guns. It is, they're loading bullets into guns. They're shooting, you know, and it's close quarters. Like I said, it's a tall cylindrical pointy tube. You would think that there would be shots ricocheting everywhere and at a certain, and like they're smoking on the ship. And I kind of cringe to think what their air filtration system must look like, because they got to constantly be pulling these filters out to deal with all the lucky strikes that are being smoked. And then they're shooting guns. And then at a certain point, they're like, "Oh, we'll gas it and knock it out because, you know, so-and-so's brother made a knockout gas." So they're dropping these, and literally they're glass. They're the size of softballs, if you were to imagine this. And they're glass softball-shaped containers with, you know, a cone for a neck, and it's stoppered. And they're taking these things and they're dropping it on it, trying to knock it out. And for something that consumes a lot of oxygen, it really doesn't seem to breathe much on the ship, because they dropped about 6 or 8 of those things on it, and it was supposed to, like, you know, take down an elephant, and it didn't do anything to it. So at this point, they're at they're desperately trying to survive on this trip that's 4 months to get them from Mars to Earth. And the concern is, if they drop it on Earth, if they were to all die, this thing obviously has been on the planet for how many years without oxygen or water from humans to leech off of. But if they get it to Earth, it's going to run rampant and there's going to be no way to stop it. So by the end of the film, they eventually figure out what they have to do. But some of the, you know, I talk about the suspension of disbelief. At a certain point, one of the crew members is wearing a protective suit. So he's got a layer of protection, and this thing nabs him, and he ends up kind of pulling away and gets his leg caught in a piece of equipment, like at the base of it, and breaks his leg. And I'm using air quotes when I say breaks his leg, because he can kind of shuffle around with this shoddy broken leg. Either right. that or he has no concept of what broken really is. So, I mean...
Maybe it's the gravity on Mars.
Hey, that's good. I like it.
It's not as strong, so he doesn't feel as much pain with
his
broken leg.
I think it's from the lack of oxygen from the air scrubbers working overtime and all the cigarette smoke and the carbon monoxide in there. It's making them all lightheaded and giddy. So it doesn't have, you know, we've come to expect, at least at this day and age, visceral science. You know, there, you would deal with gravity, but there would be like a visual representation of people moving slightly differently because there's, you know, a difference in gravity, or, you know, creatures that look different would look very, very alien in the respect that it would look not like a guy in a shaved rubber gorilla suit. I mean, if I were to describe this to you without you actually clicking the link in the show notes to take a look at the movie poster, it looks like you took a gorilla mask and kind of flattened the face a bit, but then wrapped it around sort of a cylinder. So it's kind of flattish but rounded. You know, it doesn't have like a nose that juts out. It's all squat right on the face. It's 50s. When you think of 50s schlock sci-fi, that's exactly what you get. And it's not like what we're used to nowadays. Like, you know, if you did see Prometheus, you know, the engineer, which is completely alien from, it does look humanoid, but it still looks very different. Do you know what I'm trying to say? There's thought in the design to make it look alien enough, but make it look realistically alien, if that makes sense.
Yes. Sure.
The technology didn't exist back then, and it's just very interesting to see that progression through cinema. When you get to the 50s, you start to get into the 60s, and you get 2001, A Space Odyssey, and the technology advances, and so does that expectation of what science is going to be represented as in cinema. So it's really interesting to take that look back in time and see how science is represented in the 50s. And how it's supposed to look like in this film in 73. And this movie was filmed in 57. So obviously in a short period of time, we were going to have rocket travel. And God, by that time, we hadn't even been to the moon.
No, not by then. No.
Until 1969.
Yeah. So, it's just very fascinating. And, you know, I geek out about the 50s so much, which is kind of the reason why I chose this particular topic for the special, Attack of the 50s.
So how would you want it remade? That is one of the discussion points on this thing.
Yeah.
I guess the initial question, would you want it remade?
You know, in all honesty, if you were to watch this movie and then watch Alien, a lot of the concepts are very similar. You've got people on a planet who pick something up and have to struggle to survive. And what's interesting, and I'm kind of giving something away here in two movies, but in order to take out it, because they've realized that it needs water and oxygen, and it consumes a lot of oxygen. If they remove the oxygen from the ship, they can kill it. And in Alien, Ripley does open, and essentially it's to jettison the alien out of the craft. But again, right. Opening the space, you know, opening the doors to space to sweep the alien out or take care of the alien is the solution to the problem. So if you were to watch it, Terror from Beyond Space, and then watch Alien, you'd kind of scratch your head and go, wow, I think they kind of did remake this film, but made it a lot better.
All right.
So, that would be my recommendation to remake
it. The theme is, it was remade already. It's called Alien, and it's a great movie, so go watch it.
Exactly.
Rock on.
Rock on.
I like it. Anything else to say about the...
I think I talked way too much about it, and people are sleeping right now. So I think
not at all. I just feel a motivation to like we. There's no easy way to say this, Anessa. You have a movie.
I do have a movie.
Did you watch it?
I did.
what was that like? Tell us about your movie going experience.
It was. That's what it was. No, I actually kind of liked this movie. I mean, it wasn't the greatest thing ever, and the sets were kind of hokey at times. But
what was it called?
The planet that I watched, or the movie that I watched was The Man from Planet X. Uh-huh. And it starts off being narrated by this newspaper reporter who became friends with this astronomer years back when he was in the military. He gets word from the astronomer to go to this little island off of Scotland, one of the moors. And so he goes, and the reason why he's called there is because there's this planet that the scientist has discovered that's coming towards Earth. All of a sudden, there's a planet in our solar system that we didn't know about before.
It's that's awesome.
Planet X, and it's coming towards Earth. And
as
Brad was doing the intro, like, this thought occurred to me that, have you guys ever heard of Nibiru?
No. What is that?
All?
Is that a rogue planet? Is that Planet X? Is this going to happen, Anessa?
Nibiru is this, basically, it's Planet X, except this lady back in the 90s came up with this idea, for whatever reason, that there's this mysterious planet that's coming towards the Earth, and it's going to collide with Earth, and it was supposed to happen back in 2003. It didn't happen, so they're like, ah, whatever. So now I think they've kind of shifted it over to 2012. And I'm thinking she probably got the idea because she was watching this movie.
Yeah, well, to interrupt, I was almost, when you mentioned that, and I have seen Man from Planet X before, but when you mentioned that, it kind of made me think of Melancholia from 2011. I think it was last year, which is, planet, mysterious planet is coming towards the Earth, and it's going to, they're going to destroy each other.
I haven't seen that, so I don't know. They've all seen Planet X, and so I guess Melancholia would be kind of a remake of it. I don't know. But anyway, so the guy goes, and they see this planet coming towards them or towards Earth, and they determine that it'll come to its closest approach within a 3-week period. And I think it's that night when the newspaper reporter first gets there. He's going back to he's kind of hanging out before he goes to the hotel to sleep for the night, and they come across like this object laying down in the middle of nowhere, and they were wondering if it was a bomb, but they never really quite figure out what it is at first. And so the girl, the scientist's daughter, takes the guy into town, drops him off at the inn. On her way back, she gets a flat tire. Walking home, she comes across like the spaceship with this alien that has like a big head. Kind of has an Easter Island-ish statue kind of feel to it, or like an African mask, I don't know. But the eyes were like small slits and very hollow. And so she freaks out and runs home. And there's another scientist that's there that's kind of evil. And so the next day they go to investigate, and the alien somehow knocks loose its little valve, I guess, that helps it breathe because it can't breathe oxygen, apparently.
Yep.
And they help him out, and then they back away and kind of make a run for it back to the house or whatever the tower was, the Brock. And the alien follows them back, and so they decide to try to communicate with the alien. And Dr. Mears, the evil scientist guy, says, "Oh, let me spend time with him," and ends up abusing the alien because he's wanting to figure out what the metal is so he can manufacture it and make a whole bunch of money. And so the alien gets mad and starts abducting people and shooting like this light at them and turning them into slaves. But it ends up turning out that the alien's just trying to set up like a transmitter to communicate back to the planet that's coming, or planet X that's coming towards Earth, I guess, to send an invasion of Earth because they need a new home because their planet is dying. So that's pretty much the movie.
So does, spoiler, does the planet ever actually collide with Earth?
It does not collide with Earth. It's funny because they have a view, I guess, through a telescope, and you see you see this this planet coming towards Earth, and it kind of swoops down across and then starts backing away. And it's a little on the transparent side because you can see the stars moving behind the planet. So you can tell like a video overlaid another video. So it's like they just have the stars backdrop and then you have like the film.
We'll
like
fix it in post. Planet. Oh, wait, there is no post. Crap. Post. All right. We got to go.
So, but like the hollow eyes of the alien was kind of creepy. And he kind of reminded me of the Santarans just because he had a really big head, skinny waist, broad shoulders a little bit. But he had Santarans and alien from Doctor Who, kind of like a potato head guy.
All right.
So. Yeah, the creature, the man from Planet X, those eyes just look kind of dead and creepy, and then he's got the huge glass thing over his melon, you know, kind of like Mars Attacks, which is kind of a nice throwback to 50s sci-fi. So, yeah, just really, really creepy.
The end. Did you... By Bradley.
Cool story, bro. Cool story, bro.
Word.
So, Nessa, any other thoughts about the film?
Not particularly. I did actually halfway through the movie recognize one of the characters, one of the actors, which would have been Dr. Mears. If he's been in everything, but I remember him from the Patty Duke show of all things. He's the dad of Patty. The uncle.
Yeah, I didn't recognize anybody.
The other person, I don't remember.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Remake, what do you think?
Well, from the sounds of it, Melancholia sounds like it could possibly be the remake.
Well, so,
in a way.
Yeah, there's no aliens in that.
Right, there's no aliens. But, I mean, as far as the concept of a planet heading towards Earth, like, I don't think we could really get away with it without a lot of people going, that'll never happen. But I don't know, maybe if they changed it to just a really big asteroid that's somehow able to sustain life. I don't know.
I think I recall a story of
travel.
I think
that would be kind of a deep impact thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to miss a thing.
Oh jeez.
No.
Armageddon. Dude, I know you got
you're welcome.
I shake my head at
you. That was a real tangent, sir.
Yeah, you're welcome. You've listened to the alien invasion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets tangential.
It's what he do.
And it's usually my fault.
All right. Anessa, anything else?
Nope.
All right, that is wonderful.
That's pretty much it.
Okay. I saw a movie, too.
What did you see?
I saw a film called The Angry Red Planet. I guess I should get this out of the way. Anyone else seen it?
No.
Okay. So this film was made in 1959 and supposedly with a budget of $190,000. So, yeah.
That's very low budget, especially for that, even in that time period.
Right. So, anyway, the whole story, this is, by the way, this is streaming on Netflix. If somebody wants to check this out, hey, there you go. And also, folks, 50s movies, I never watch them, ever. Ever, 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 ever. So, if you're listening to this saying, dude, Paul, I never watch 50s movies, especially sci-fi 50s movies. And I am here to tell you that if you were to watch a 50s movie, it should be a science fiction movie. There's no question about that. Like, you will get so much more enjoyment of it being a science fiction movie just because it's great fodder for a community-based event.
Absolutely. It's the foundation of MST3K. So, right. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So anyway, the story goes that a rocket from Mars has landed back on Earth. It had been missing for months, and nobody had had any contact with it. And it landed, ironically, exactly the way it took off. I didn't know rockets could do that. So it was science. Perfect. It was like, it did it twice. Like, you could totally see it. It just, yes, the rocket was pointing straight up, and it just naturally came down. It was perfect. It was a very nice landing. But anyway, they assumed that the people on this mission to Mars were killed. However, when they actually open up the spacecraft, one person is found to be, quote-unquote, infected, and another woman is also there, and she has some kind of amnesia that's not really ever really explained, but she can't really remember all of what's happening. So what how the story ends up going is the military and these scientists all start talking with this woman while she's trying to get treatment for, you know, whatever, dehydration, whatever. And then they flash back to when they actually went into space. So they're basically, it's kind of the classic trope of you see the result of what had happened, and then you go back and say, okay, this is how it got to that point. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm like, oh, this is where, or at least this was part of what started the original idea. So yeah. Did anyone else feel like that everything was very intentional? Like the acting and the writing?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There's zero subtlety.
There's a level of earnestness that is being portrayed, because it was almost like, yes, we've got all this weird, crazy lighted dial thing, but we're going to act the hell out of this right now.
Yes.
And you're going to believe this, even though there's all this weird spacey crap here. We're going to just act the hell out of this, and you're going to buy it.
Make sure you enunciate.
Yes. Yes. A lot of that.
If anything else, that kind of took me out of the whole thing. I'm like, this is not believable. Like, by any stretch, this is not normal human conversation, what you people are having. This is a very coordinated and scripted event, which I suppose is the truth, but still, at least make an effort. Anywho, so yeah, they go to the planet, and again, this was just, I don't really know. They never really explained what they were doing there, other than like a fact-finding tour, I guess. And they struck me as blasé space travelers. In fact, that word was, they called themselves blasé space travelers. I don't know quite what that means, but hey.
Sounds like they're communists.
Yeah. We'll get to the communist themes in just a second. So anyway, they land on this planet, and naturally, the first thing you got to do when you land on an alien planet is start to look around. First of all, when they get out of the ship, like, the film's in color, and it looks, you know, relatively normal. You get outside, and they saturated everything in red. Like, there is no other color. It's just shades of red. And they're all, like, they're freaking everywhere. And get this, the first thing that you see is a bunch of trees. Foliage everywhere. Like, this is a jungle. Like, this is exactly where they are. And they are, like, they are just, there's everything. There's all kinds of plant life. That was one of the first things they noticed. And they're like, ooh, this is, naturally, there's some form of life here.
Well, at some
there must be intelligent life.
at some point, up until the 60s, there was the idea that there were actually these canals on Mars that were created by, like, some sort of civilization.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yep.
Like, Percival Lowell is the guy who wrote, like, three books on that, and it was neither confirmed or, I guess, unconfirmed until Mariner, I think, went in 1965, 66 by Mars, to Mars. So they had no idea at that point. It was a good guess.
Yeah.
Guess any.
So. I guess. That was kind of what I was asking earlier. I'm like, I thought they knew that there wasn't much on Mars, but apparently they thought there was plenty.
So at least they thought there were canals that were created by people or aliens. So.
No, well, it gets better. Like, okay, they also discover they mistook this thing for a tree, and they started hacking it down. The moment they took a swing at this quote unquote tree, it comes alive, and it turns into this. And I kid you not, this is at, if you can look at it in Wikipedia, it turns into a 40-foot tall bat rat spider creature. It has the legs of a spider. And like kind of like the face of a bat, and has like these big long ears, like a rat thing. It was awesome. I really liked that. That was pretty stupid. And by the way, they did have future guns, just for everyone's amusement. They weren't ray guns. They were like these. They didn't have any effect to have a physical projectile come out of the gun. It just looked like a pulse gun.
Okay.
So, but you didn't see, like, all you see is him just pointing the thing and pretending like he's firing. There's no, like, effect to it to simulate that he's actually hitting anything, which I thought was, like, I'm like, really? I thought they would have done something, but no, it was just a gun that shot nothing.
Not even a pew, pew, pew. It was just that, huh?
They had some kind of a sound effect, I think, but there was no, like... Yeah, there was no visual approximation. They were like, aim for the eyes! And he aims, and then, like, all of a sudden the pupils of the eyes of this creature just go, like, they don't exist anymore, and that's to simulate that the rat spider thingy is blinded, and it's going, it's covering its face.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That is awesome.
So this was fact-finding tour number one. Okay, fact-finding, and then basically after this whole... event, they go back to their ship to find that their radio signals have been blocked and they essentially can't take off. They go back out again, and then they run across they're essentially trying to figure out why they're trapped on this planet, and they find this giant lake and with a visible city on the other side of it. Like, and I'm not even joking, it looks like a city, complete with like tall future buildings and like, you know, buildings. So they see a city on Mars. They're very happy about this, by the way. They're like, oh, there must be intelligent life here again. I'm like, oh, that's yes, you think? Okay, that's cool. So they get into this big inflatable raft that they had. Just go with it. And they go across this river with these paddles. And this giant amoeba thing comes slurping out of the water. And this is all puppetry. Like, what I'm describing to you is all, obviously, it's all just fake, like, puppets. That's essentially what it is. But anyway.
But you're not talking about, like, Ray Harryhausen's stop motion animation. You're talking about actually...
No, they're puppets.
Large-scale puppets?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, the rat thing was nothing more than, like, you had... shots of, whenever you had it in the same frame as people, which I no, come to think of it, you never did. You'd only see like a leg, like where you actually saw big people. You'll see this giant leg, and then you'll just see the spider thingy.
Gotcha.
You'll never see them together. But yeah, this giant, like, it's just this ooze thing that comes out of the lake, and again attacks people, and it has one giant spinning eye that they're just, you know, it's just amoeba with an eye. Again, just go with it. kills one of the people and infects the other dude. When he infects his arm. And when I say infect, I mean like there's this green stuff on it. It looks like Jell-O. It probably was Jell-O. And I should also point out, if we're going with space travel protocol. One of the crew members was a professor, and he had a pipe, and he was smoking it the entire time, which I loved. I thought that was the most freaking hilarious thing. Yes, of course we have to have a professor, and he has to have the pipe, like a total like Sigmund Freud pipe.
That's how you visually signify that you have a brain in your head, and it's because you smoke a pipe.
Yeah, exactly right. And again, pointing back, I'm so glad that sexism existed, because it is hilarious to listen to these people talk. There was three guys and one woman. The woman was, in fact, It was in fact a doctor, Dr. Iris Ryan, and they called her Irish. I don't know, that's just what they called her. I don't know why.
That's because everybody else on the mission was drunk.
That actually would not surprise me very much. But anyway, one of the lines in the, not only did one of the crew members hit on her and ask her out on a date, in mid-mission, to which she said, okay, that sounds like a date. But before you put on your spacesuit, they're like, one of the jokes was that he's like, I'm disappointed that we have to wear these spacesuits where it's ruining all your lovely curves. And she's like, oh, you. Yeah, that's totally fine.
Wow. Yeah. It's just the level of, and that was okay at the time.
Yeah.
You know, in certain points in history, certain things are just okay.
Yeah, you know, I guess.
And it's just, and we look at it now and we're just mortified.
I defy anybody to watch this movie and not laugh. I think that's true of most of sci-fi. I think that's obviously, again, where this whole, science fiction,
genre?
No, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose my geek card for this. The commentary on those things that are commenting on old science fiction movies. Mystery Science Theater. There it is. Okay.
Wow, that was a long way to go, my friend. Yes, a long way to go.
I didn't feel like the payoff was there.
Wow. Paul reached the bridge too far verbally this evening. That's usually Dave's job, so it's nice to have that. It's like Dave is with us right now.
Well, he normally doesn't give me a chance. He goes there first. You know what I mean? I don't have that opportunity, but tonight I do. Thank you, everybody. I'm glad you're here for all this. Also, Irish, always perfect makeup and hair. She could be, having gone through an incredibly traumatic event, perfect hair. And perfect makeup as she's lying inside of the hospital bed. It's, like you do.
Who doesn't have perfect makeup and hair when they're...
I don't know.
Planet.
I do. I mean, what?
According to the 50s, everybody was perfect. They didn't miss a beat.
No,
so, absolutely not. Anyway, giant amoeba thing attacks the crew. They are forced to flee back to the ship. So, yeah, and essentially hijinks ensue, and they go back home.
Hijinks.
Yeah. Well, this is where this gets interesting, is that they find out that the woman has this epiphany that if you just electrocute the thing that's infecting this guy's arm that's seemingly getting worse, that it'll just go away. And that's what happens, which is essentially, yeah, there you go.
Wow.
So that's when all else fails, electrocute it.
Well, if you think about it, at the time, the atom bomb has been around for a very short period of time. So that's really kind of dangerous technology. But electricity is just enough sci-fi and just enough realistic that you could still that's a kind of a grounding element. And I used the word grounding, didn't I? Sure. Didn't mean to use it that way. But, in all of that disbelief and all the weirdness going on, having something believable, and maybe that's what they were going for.
I think it was a bit more broad. They were treating this thing as intelligent. So her point was that we have been treating this thing as though it were an infection, which I say it is, but she's saying we should treat it like a creature. So the idea was that you wouldn't electrocute him so much that it would actually cause any real damage to him. It was merely to annoy the thing to go away.
So did it actually like kind of off of his arm?
Yeah. You got it. There was
and
no.
I used sound effects for that.
There was no like, you know, there was no effect moment like, ooh, it went away. It's just like, hey, this my arm's all sweet now. It looks gone. Amazing. This is where it gets interesting. At the very last, like seriously last 60 seconds of the film, this whole mission has been recorded. They've been recording the audio of it. And when they get back, the back meaning Earth, they notice that the tape for all that they can tell is blank. Like it was recorded, there's stuff there, they just can't decipher it. At the very end of the film, they finally decipher it, and they come to find out that what is on there is a message from Martians. And that message is saying that basically you guys should never come back here. And they made a comment about it. The whole tone of the movie is what I felt at the, like, and this doesn't really come to fruition until the very end, is an overall fear of tech. Because they said that them being the Martians said that we have the technology of an adult, but the emotional maturity of an adolescent. Yeah. So the whole thing was just basically, I think the whole theme was just overreaching as human beings. So I would imagine a lot of that had to do with the atom bomb, and a lot of that had to do with, you know, just an overall sense of fear that we were ready to wipe ourselves out.
You know, and I think that's one thing that you find that's sort of common is, you know, and even Gene Roddenberry did it in the 60s with Star Trek, is it's you get to use sci-fi as a vehicle for commentary on, you know, the social quality of life, social structure, events that are taking place. It's just a kind of a cool way to kind of thinly veil it and not be preachy. So sure. I think that was kind of a cool vehicle for social awareness.
I think I've brought this up before, but he's done that with racist commentary. Like, you know, sure, in the future, you can't have a white man with Uhura. But that was like, wasn't that the first interracial on-screen kiss or something like that?
It was. And but, it almost went to Leonard Nimoy and Shatner found out about it and he went, no, I get that. What a prick.
Oh, dude.
I'm sorry. Anyway.
So, yeah, you're right. It's a good vehicle. It makes things seem more abstract than they really are. You know, like, oh, obviously this could never happen because it's in the future somewhere. This is crazy universe and that you should not worry about all this crap.
Yep.
But yeah, actually, I didn't catch, like, I wasn't, again, until the very end that I actually found a lot of parallels to The Abyss, because that's essentially the same thing they kind of go through, except, I guess, in the end, the quote-unquote aliens were actually, a lot of them were very dangerous, when in reality, in The Abyss, the aliens were not dangerous unless, you know, you start screwing with them.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of that, basically, just kind of like the special being informing the lesser being that you need to watch your step. You're going in the wrong direction and you need to fix yourself. So yeah, that was kind of my sense of the thing. But anyway, if you were to remake it, there's no way. People aren't as afraid of technology as they were. That's just the case of it, I think. I mean, I don't think people are nearly as afraid as they once were of complete nuclear destruction, even though, you know, everybody has the capability, but I don't think people are afraid of it as much. I think if they were to try and remake this movie, I would think they'd have to hit a much darker tone than what they did to get if they wanted to get their point across.
Yeah, I would, you know, and I think that we've kind of reached a point as a society that we're we're jaded to a certain point. You know, we've seen so much as a people. You know, lots of war, lots of different things have happened, and we want more and more gritty. I mean, God, we're watching reality TV now.
I'm not. Don't put me in that category.
I'm not either. But I'm saying,
I know your point. Yes, absolutely.
Other people
who aren't as cool as us. I'm kidding. But I mean, reality TV is not so much just a cost savings to networks, but it's something that people are actually getting into. They want more realism in their lives, or they want to experience another kind of reality of somebody else's life. And I think that, you know, we're seeing other changes in our movies, in our writing, especially for movies, which I think is kind of cool. I think, you know, like movies like The Avengers, you saw, and that's Joss Whedon's style, but it's a lot more character driven. It's a lot more, mm-hmm. not so much about the setting or the technology. It's about the people. It's about the gritty realism of what makes people tick, how people got into the situations they're in and how they're going to get out of it. So just a more grittier version of reality is what we've come to expect. And the 50s were just so sort of happy-go-lucky. And, you know, when you look at a lot of the advertising in the 40s and 50s, it just seems like there's this happy-go-lucky optimism. You know, we destroyed the Krauts and saved the world, and now we're going to conquer everything else on the planet. And there's just that weird level of can-do-itedness that we just don't seem to have anymore. At least I don't see it anymore in our advertising and our television. So
I don't believe it. I think you're right. I guess part of it is being jaded. Like, you're like, you know, we look at all this stuff in the past and we say it's hokey, which, you know, it is, because it's not like, it doesn't seem like if people were to behave that way right now, like in a television show or commercials, whatever, we'd say that it's like, it's not even trying, you know, because I don't know what I'm trying to say, except that people wouldn't buy it. If they were advertising something, people wouldn't buy it.
No, I would agree with that. And we seem to be taking over the conversation. Anessa, hi, you still there?
Maybe.
No, what are your thoughts? I mean, you've watched your movie, you've watched other sci-fi movies. As a comparison, how do you think that things have changed, you know, from the 50s to today, and what people maybe expect from their entertainment?
I think it might not even be like the hokey acting. I think a lot of people have a tendency of seeing black and white, because a lot of the sci-fi movies in the 50s were black and white, and as soon as they see that it's black and white, they think, oh god, that's so boring. For some reason, they associate being black and white, like film, as being really boring, because they want color, they want things to pop out at them. And with the sci-fi, well, not even just sci-fi, but like the 50s and 40s and 30s, like those films were in black and white. And so a lot of people miss out on the movies that, sure, you know, in some parts they are kind of hokey, but they have a really good story behind them, and they miss out because they expect, or they've grown used to, a style that has color and has a lot of action, and movies don't really have that.
Sure.
Or as much, I guess, back in the day. So, and it's not even so much like the hokey acting or the bad sets. Just, I've talked to a lot of people just kind of growing up, and they're like, oh, black and white, I don't like it, it's boring. I'm like, but it's a really good movie. And they're like, it's boring, it's black and white. So, they don't like black and white. I like black and white.
No, it's a different medium, absolutely. You know, and this ties into it with people talking about things being boring. Trivial fact that still kind of relates to this is The Forbidden Planet, which is probably one of the best 50s sci-fi movies that you can watch, is actually a science fiction retelling of Shakespeare's The Tempest.
Oh. Okay. I'll have to take your word for that. But actually, that makes a lot of sense.
Just like Strange Brew is actually a retelling of Hamlet.
I've not seen Strange Brew.
Oh, you should. I mean, this is totally off topic right now, but you need to watch Strange Brew. Watch Strange Brew and then think of Hamlet if you've read it before or you know anything about it, and you go, oh, yeah, I get it. So anyway, I like to throw in trivial crap. That's my shtick on Alien Invasion. So there you go.
Good job, Brad.
Thank you very much. And I think that we've gone about an hour here, so I think it might be time to wrap this up, huh?
Thumbs up.
All right, we'll bring it on home here. So you've been listening to our third special in the Galactic Netcasts library. You can leave us feedback by going to contact.galacticnetcasts.com, by emailing galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, calling our voicemail. Yes, we do have a voicemail number at 805-328-3966, or there's so many different ways you can get a hold of us, or you can leave a comment in the forums at galacticnetcasts.com/community. This Galactic Netcast special is brought to you by audible.com. For you, the Galactic Netcast listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Again, that's audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts for your free audiobook. With your $14.95 a month subscription fee, you'll get one free audiobook download per month, the ability to save 30% on additional purchases, free digital subscription to the New York Times or Wall Street Journal, and, wow, there's a lot of stuff here, member-only special sales and promotions. And we thank Audible for their support of Galactic Netcast's programs and specials.
Woo-hoo. Yay. Dun, dun,
dun. So, thanks to everybody for taking the time to listen to this and to view, if you did take the time to do so. This is also going to be on YouTube. You could be watching it on YouTube right now. excuse me. Thank you for watching. And thank you to Anessa.
Yay.
And thank you to Paul.
Yay. And, See, it doesn't work when I do it. Thanks, Brad.
No, that really sounded like an unenthusiastic. Yeah. Hey. It's like somebody dropped a 250-pound weight on your chest and you've lost the will to live.
I'll work on that.
We love you, Paul.
I know.
Do you need a hug, Paul? Do you need a digital hug?
No. Okay. No, not from you guys.
I see how it is.
I want to give you a hug anyway.
Fine. You do your time traveling robots in space show, and I'll do my alien invasion show, and then we'll do a special when we can tolerate each other again. How's that?
That works out perfectly.
And I will see you both next week at each show.
And Anessa's in the middle. Dun, dun, dun.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.